We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to Mishnah Yutet of the fifth chapter. Kol mi sheyesh bo shlosha dvarim halalu mitalmidav shel Avraham Avinu. Whoever has within him the following three things is a disciple of Avraham Avinu. Is from the disciples of Avraham Avinu. Veshlosha dvarim acherim mitalmidav shel Bilam Arasha. And three other things put him as among the disciples of Bilam the wicked. Ayin tova, a good eye. What's a good eye? The Rambam learns that a good eye is a person who's happy with his lot. He isn't always looking for more. He isn't a jealous person. He's happy when other people get honor. He's happy when other people have it good. That's Ayin Tova. He's got a good eye. So a good eye means I'm not jealous of the other, and I'm happy when the other has. Ayin Tova. Veruach Nemucha. And a humble spirit. So that's exceptional humility. Ve Nefesh. We said Ruach Nemucha. Ve Nefesh Shefeila. He's so humble that among other people he's willing to put himself down, let other people get the credit. That's a step above Ruach Nemucha. Ruach Nemucha is humility. Nefesh Shefeila is when he's among others, he's happy to let them take the credit. So that's Mitalmidav Shel Avraham Avinu. He is from the disciples of Avraham, our forefather. So the Tana then goes on to whoever has the opposite, he is from the disciples of Bilam. What do we say about the disciples of Avram? What do we say about the disciples of Bilam? So the Mishnah goes to great lengths, and today we'll focus on the first one or two or three, and then we'll continue with the Mishnah Bezrat Shem next week. So the first reading of the Mishnah teaches us something. Kol mi sheyesh bo, whoever has within him these three things is from the disciples of Avraham Avinu. So what would we say? Either you got it or you don't. Kol mi sheyesh bo. No. So that's why the Rambam writes for us the introduction to this whole tractate, that the tractate is about what should we aspire to acquire. The tractate discusses with us the traits we should desire, and then it's up to us to get there. So what is the first trait? We said, Ayin Tova, a good eye, a good eye. I'm happy with what I have. So we discussed numerous times that in every marriage there's the better other. It's not right to say every marriage, but generally psychologists say it's very common that there's the better other. The neighbor's wife is prettier, she's sweeter, she's nicer, she's gentler. That girl I dated is prettier, was nicer, was gentler, was smarter. The other girl I dated, her father was a wealthy businessman, her father was a big Talmid Chacham, her father was a philanthropist, she grew up in a house where it was all chesed. My brother's wife is... My neighbor's wife is, there's, within the nature of man, there's that tendency, not only to think the grass on the other side is greener, but also the wife on the other side is nicer. Ayin Tova, this is a trait a person can acquire. We won't discuss the biblical prohibition of Lo Tachmod. We won't discuss the biblical requirement not to look at the neighbor's wife or think of the brother's wife, etc. But from our own perspective, as far as building our own traits, so Ayin Tova, what's the root of Ayin Tova? That a person's happy with his lot. And if a person thinks I'll be happy when I have a bigger house, I'll be happy when I have I have something, then he's never going to be happy. Happiness is a state of our own being. And a person that's happy could be happy in every situation. My grandmother once told me they had a saying, they had the big city of Warsaw, and they had a little town, I don't remember the name, they had a little town in Poland. So they used to say, you have people who live in the little town, but in their house they have the big city. And you have people who live in the big city, but in their house they have the little town. And it's not a reflection of their wealth, it's a reflection of their heart. Whether you're happy or discontent with what you have is far more a reflection of where you are. Viktor Frankl, in his book, describes with tremendous accuracy the brutality of what he witnessed. He describes they're sitting next to a person as the person breathes their last breath, and a minute later, the person's not breathing, and he sees how two people grab him by his feet, and they have to take him out to the crematory. And as they carry him out, he sees that same head he was talking to a minute ago bumping up the steps, a lifeless body with zero respect and zero regard for that body. And he doesn't flinch. He doesn't flinch. He gets so accustomed to seeing what's going on around him. Now, he went into the Holocaust, a psychologist. He's once working on the railroad tracks, and the Nazi foreman tells him, you know, you're not working hard enough. Cheaper laborers do more work in less time with more zeal. You're a bunch of pigs. All you do is take advantage of us. And he says to him, you know, cheaper laborers have a normal life, have a normal supper, have a normal breakfast, have less worry, have normal clothing, and they're not being beaten or threatened daily or taken out of their beds at 5 o'clock in the morning. And the Nazi says to him, you were probably a bloodsucker before you came into these camps. So he says, well, actually, I was a doctor. So he says to him, yeah, you were probably one of those blood-sucking doctors who would only treat patients if they had a lot of money. And he says, well, actually, no, most of my work was voluntary. I did a large amount of my work for free. At which point the Nazi pounced on him and started beating him to a point where he was almost lifeless. So there was a foreman there who liked him because he'd always take counsel with him about his up-and-coming relationship with a girl who he thought he'd marry, so he walked over and saved his life. So he's there, bleeding, and the next morning, at 5 o'clock in the morning, he comes out, they're thrown out of their beds, and they're walking in the snow, and they're all frostbitten, and their feet are all swollen to the point where they can't even fit their shoes on their feet, and as they're walking, water is coming into their shoes and then freezing on their feet, and little by little, everyone loses one toe and another toe, and they're walking like this, frozen through the night, and they can't bear looking to their left or to their right because then they could get beaten by a Nazi who's watching them. And as he's walking there, he suddenly, the guy standing to his left mutters to him, if only our wives saw us now. And that line suddenly throws him to a different place. He starts thinking about his wife. He doesn't know if she's alive or dead. He hasn't seen her in ages. And he doesn't know where she is, and he doesn't know what's doing with her. But as he's walking, his mind connects with her. And he starts imagining her. And he starts remembering her glow and her persona. And he starts having a conversation with her. And he's walking, and suddenly he's no longer there. He is no longer the person walking through the ice at 5 o'clock in the morning. He's having a conversation with his wife. He's in a different place. And he didn't know. He recognized that he does not know. Is she in this world or the other world? Is she alive or dead? Is she suffering like me? Is she better off? He knows nothing. But he's in a different place. And then he goes on to discuss how a person can be in a different place. We have control over our thoughts. We think, how could I be happy? Me happy? Come on. You know what I have to deal with? Yeah, we all have to deal with. At every stage in life, there are things we have to deal with. Ayin tova is something a person can develop. Ayin tova, do I see what's good? Can I look at what's good and what's right? I encourage people to compliment their spouses. Some people will say, what should I compliment her for? There are so many things that she's doing wrong. That's true. But as you compliment, you learn to appreciate. As you stress what's right, you yourself will see more what's right. Couple came and they were having a bitter argument. He wanted to make aliyah. She agreed they should make aliyah. But there were a million things she didn't know how they would deal with. She was going to have to field her job at weird hours of the night. She was going to have to deal with the kids with a whole new scenario. He was getting promoted in his job, but at the end of the day, it meant he would be home less to help her. She didn't understand the language, and she had a whole list of valid points, and she said, I'm willing to do it, but I'm really uptight and worried and antsy, and I don't see how we're going to do it. So I said to him, could you do me a favor? I want you to take 2 hours tomorrow. Go to a coffee shop, write your wife a letter describing how much you share in her hardships, describing how much you appreciate what she's going through. Just write a letter as long as you can. If you can convince her that you understand and appreciate and care for every ounce of hardship she's going through, then you can start talking about the Aliyah process. She says she's willing to do it. But she has to understand that you understand what she's going through. So the guy goes to a coffee shop, he sits down and writes a letter. 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 page, 2 pages, 3 pages, 5 pages, 10 pages. He's writing. And as he's writing, he sits back and says, I'm crazy. How can I make her go through this? So although when they were having the argument, he kept saying, you know, look at all the pluses and look at all the benefits, and then and medical care benefits, you know, the cost of medical care is going to go down and the cost of education goes down. He had all these arguments. When he sat down and started writing her a letter, and he wrote the letter initially, he didn't mean it. He was writing the letter just to placate me and placate her. He said, let me show her I know what she's going through. Let me show her how much I care for her. So he sat down and wrote the letter. And as he's writing, he sat back and said, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't do this. And at the next meeting, he said, wait, I don't see how we could do it. So in the discussion, theoretically, he knew. But when it came down to actually expressing it and putting it into writing, in this case, instead of saying it, suddenly it struck him totally differently. Well, you know what? The same is true for appreciation, for Ayin Tova. If we take the time, did you guys ever write your parents a letter of thanks for what they've done for you? Just write a letter. You'll shock yourselves. If you actually can bring yourself to say, thank you. You know, Rosh Hashanah is just around the corner. Not a bad letter to write. And when a person forces himself to express the Ayin Tova, that's how a person can slowly acquire the Ayin Tova. Yes?
Half of the fact that we're doing it, Shiva Machon Meir, just like to say that story sounds rather bittersweet.
No, they made Aliyah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say they didn't make Aliyah, but they made Aliyah when he had true empathy. And then he could sit down and understand her perspective, and they could actually work out how they're going to do it. Until then, it was a sharp argument where he wasn't even registering her. He was saying, you know, he knew how to say what she was saying. It wasn't registering. When he had to express it, you know, I have such appreciation that you're willing to put up with X. And I can't begin to say my hakarat hatov that you're willing to put up with Y. And as he's writing it, he suddenly sees the picture differently. So again, so that was the first point. Ayin Tova. And when a person can work on acquiring that, then a person has taken many steps forward to acquiring the good life. Because when a person has appreciation, so then he's in constant good mode, you know. Life's great. You wake up in the morning and the kids are pulling open your eyes. You guys are going to have this pleasure. Where kids come and say, Abba, are you awake yet? And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they're pulling open your eyes. Abba, are you awake yet? So you're laughing now. But when you just got to bed at 2 o'clock from putting the little one asleep, and at 3 o'clock the next one's coming and checking, Abba, are you awake yet? And as they're sitting on your stomach, you sense that they had an accident and now you're all wet. You don't feel too happy. So you look at the kid and you say, you know, it's time to go back to sleep. And the kid's holding an egg in their hand and half of it's cracked. And they say, but I was in the middle of making a cake. I wanted to make a surprise for you. And you look down and you see there's a streak of broken eggs all the way back to the kitchen. And you realize you have your work cut out for you. So it's natural to feel very frustrated. How does a person attain that level where he could look at it and say, I'm so lucky, I have a cute 3-year-old pulling open my eyes, saying, Abba, are you awake yet? You know, here, you're not in the story, so it's very easy to look at it and appreciate the beauty. But when you're in and dealing, so then the nature is that you feel most the difficulties, and the appreciation goes out the window. And when you're a grandparent, then you can look at your kids and say, oh, they're so cute, because you're not dealing with the hardships. So when a person gets accustomed to Ayin Tova, which really is a midah, it's a trait that a person can acquire through speech, through accustoming oneself to say appreciation for the good. Then a person lives life and enjoys it. If a person walks home and tells the kids, hey, I missed you, so good to see you, you speak positive. Sometimes you don't feel it. Sometimes you feel like, hey, I wanted to come home to peace and quiet. I didn't want you to all pounce on me and tell me what you want and need and what papers I have to sign and who's going on a trip tomorrow and we have to arrange this, that, and other thing. That's not what I wanted. Right, but speak positive, you'll feel positive. The Ayin Tova is something we have to develop. It doesn't come naturally. And when we develop it, then we're the winners. We can walk around being happier people. Okay, we'll pick up here next week.